The Lonely Office, your playbook for navigating the messy line between work and life. Our topics are sourced from real anonymous workplace conversations happening within Glassdoor communities, from getting fired for being pregnant, which is insane, to getting hired at a quote-unquote evil corporation. We discuss timely work-life issues so you don't have to brave the professional world alone.
All right.
What are we talking about today, Aaron?
Oscars.
Well,
it's a little late for that.
A little late, but it's our version of the Oscars. It's Oscar performance worthy. And do you know who the winner is this year? It's Maria. I got to tell you a story about Maria. Yes. So she works in the strategy department of a pharmaceutical firm. Matt and Leah, she's legendary around her department. Not in the way you might think. You see, Maria only shows up to work just once every quarter.
Dream job.
Hey, look, I mean, it could be remote. It's in person. Doesn't matter. Once a quarter. Sound odd? Well, TLO listeners, her colleagues are baffled by it too. They're not even sure, frankly, what she does most of the year. To them, Maria is like a phantom. She doesn't get involved in daily tasks. She doesn't dive into the weeds. Her camera is always off during Zoom calls, and she always seems to be on vacation with that little palm tree or slow to respond on Slack.
It's one of those types.
But that all changes when the end of the quarter hits. Then it's time for Maria's big quarterly all-hands PowerPoint performance. And just when everyone is doubting, there's Maria doing her best Katharine Hepburn, commanding the attention of the CEO, the CFO, the COO, while presenting to the entire company during this quarterly all-hands meeting. Listen, she says all the right things that make the brass just nod their heads up and down. And they say, wow, do you see that presentation? So glad we have Maria here to lead the charge.
Rolling my eyes.
Then the cycle repeats. Maria vanishes again, only to reemerge during the next quarterly all hands. Now, 2 weeks before the next one, Maria gets a text. It's a screenshot of a private Slack group with several of her colleagues. The group's name is The Legend of Maria.
Nice.
Then another text arrives. This one is a cropped image of Maria taken at an old company retreat. Her hands appear to be clasping an Oscar. And written on this award is Best Performing Actress.
Oh my gosh.
Man. We all have Marias at our office.
I've had a Maria.
Maria seems to be a really good communicator and almost too skilled in that regard. Although we don't know exactly how much or how little Maria is really doing in between. I mean, we do know she's not showing up to work, but
they have the Slack threads and the text threads.
That's a pretty big indicator.
They got to be talking about this. They must be saying something like, hey.
Anybody hearing from her in Slack? Nope.
What is she doing besides just showing up 4 times a year? I don't know.
The thing with a Maria is you say, hey, you're never present on Slack. Your Slack is always like idle or away. And they're like, I'm always available. Why didn't you try to get in touch with me? It's like, dude, I know you're in your backyard drinking wine. Anyway.
You said that like we all know Maria. Do you think that Marias exist everywhere? Are they in every office?
Yeah. I actually think a Maria exists in each of our offices. And I think she is a bit of an enigmatic character. On the one hand, she's like really crafty at the art of credit appropriation. Especially when
credit appropriation is a good way to
put it. When seen from the lens of those who report to her and maybe who work alongside her in teams. But on the other hand, you know, she's a very charismatic storyteller and she appears to be a savvy visual communicator. The way she organizes her thoughts in PowerPoints puts all the C-suite to shame. She has a way of communicating complicated ideas via simple illustrations delivered with punchy one-liners. Yet Maria is something of a throwback. The story doesn't share much about her domain expertise or lack thereof, but we know she's not a coder. We also know she's not the one executing the ad campaign or the media buy. What she is, she's a communicator and a very good one at that. There's something reemergent about her type during the times we live in. We're now told that prompting oracles, those language models, with well-formulated English will be the key to future jobs and roles. Gone are the coding camps and programming languages. We all need to learn to be good communicators now. That's what makes Maria's story all the more fascinating and I think interesting for our times. We know what she has is a valuable skill and worth being lauded. But we also know that the utter lack of task checklists in her day-to-day job makes her role feel frivolous and meritless. So what's a Maria mean to you guys?
My initial reaction was thinking of someone that I worked with who... But who was very much about performing in meetings, taking credit. But before the meeting, she would be like, hey, can you give me an update on XYZ? Will you tell me how XYZ is going to work? And then you would give her all the information. And then she jump on the call, take all of the credit for it. And I have like so many instances of this and incredibly, incredibly frustrating. Taking into account, though, what you just said, there's also an aspect of people talk a lot on TikTok about the personality hire, that communicator who brings good vibes to the office. Obviously, Maria is not bringing the good vibes, but there is a lot of value to a personality hire or someone who can do a great presentation and sort of rally the troops.
Right.
But if Maria is not helping with the day-to-day tasks, she's not a personality hire.
You said she'd meet with you and her, you know, peers beforehand, yes, and she's mining for information to repackage,
yes,
or to represent.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And also to keep herself from getting in trouble for not knowing those things. I don't think it's necessarily a sinister thing if you say, this person has been working on this. This is the update that I have from her. Whatever. You give the person credit, right, who you got the information from, who did the actual work. If you're not giving credit, you know, you're kind of a jerk.
So, Leia, it seems like you think Maria's more of a
More
of a Machiavellian, yeah, corporate player than a professional communicator.
That's your take.
Aaron, what have you run into?
You mentioned credit. I think that's the key. I'm a communicator. I really appreciate people who can communicate. It's rough to listen to people who can't get across ideas in a thoughtful, effective way. Now, I know everybody has different skill sets, but I have a bias. I had someone that I worked with at an agency, and he was just in every single meeting. And everyone was like, it's the meeting guy. He's in operations, but no one knows actually what, yeah, he does, right? It's like the Enigma Maria thing.
And is everyone talking about, like, what is this guy's hourly rate? What are we paying for him to be here and contribute nothing? Because I've had those conversations too.
Yes, it's always the business ops guys where it's like, wait, why is that biz ops guy in old meetings?
What was amazing was it was a personality thing where he's in every single meeting. He's got his hands in everything, but it's never doing anything. It's just touch points. His pre-meeting banter, I just got this thing. He's talking about socks he bought. Like, he's able to.
I mean, he's the person that knows everyone's name of their dog, kids, everything.
Oh, I got a golden retriever too. And by the way, when they built a new building, we're talking millions of dollars, somehow he got into the building plans and the brass was like throwing an electric charger for his car.
Wait, he has a Tesla? Clearly he must be getting paid well if he has a Tesla.
A Chevy Volt.
But guys, it was only for him. But here's the thing though, I actually learned something from him. He knew what he was doing. Like, let's do as little as possible and use these skill sets to just figure out to play the system. He knows how to talk to those C-suite folks. A lot of them operate with sort of this, like, let's talk about unicorns and like really big ideas and let's be disruptors. What he was doing did have a skill set that I use to this day, which is like, there's a time and a place to do the work. And there's actually a time and a place to just sit back and know how to work relationships.
To work relationships. A lot of the threads hit on that point. I think what's so frustrating is, let's take one of these community threads from Glassdoor in a second, but is the perceived lack of execution and doing.
Yeah.
These folks who are being recognized and getting promoted, the perception that they're not doing much work at all and that's unfair. That's where it becomes kind of insidious. But in this particular thread, I think it hits on that frustration. In this case, this thread is titled, Getting Promoted After I Stopped Really Doing Any Work. TLDR,
okay.
I do 4 hours of work per day and I'm getting promoted. Before this, I worked incredibly hard and never got promoted. I didn't understand why. And he goes on, it would seem that me not trying to get promoted is working better versus actually working and trying. And this seems ridiculous to me.
It's like Office Space.
Any thoughts on why? Should I just keep on with my non-doing? Can you build a career like this? And he's being honest here. And then Later on, he comes back in this thread. He says, FYI, I kind of feel bad because there are a few people in this thread that are incredibly hardworking, dedicated,
probably smarter.
And I feel like basically feels guilty for getting promoted and not doing work. Very nice human being.
Yeah.
There's a comment who comes in and says, look, sometimes it's not about the amount of work you do to get promoted. It's, once again, the overall perception of the work you're doing and then the quality of work you do actually put out. I thought that was, you know, summarized really well. So it's kind of equally, yeah, you got to be doing good work, but the quantity is really not important as much as the quality. And perception is far more important than the quantity. I think that's the key. And another commenter kind of puts in here, if you're only working, you're not promoting yourself and networking. That's really like just brass tacks. Always note your accomplishments. Like, yeah, if you're spending all your time working per se and executing, you're never spending your time building social relationships like the Tesla charger guy in Aaron's story.
The headlines to these threads are incredible. I love how it's like, I noticed in my career that people who actually get the work done are the last ones to get promoted. It's this continuing theme.
I think it was your point earlier, Aaron, the senior leadership. If you're up there talking about big in the clouds ideas, they're like, oh, that's a strategic thinker. That's someone who's seeing the bigger picture. They're thinking in the same headspace I am. And the people that are out there like actually making the ad buys or coding the website or whatever it may be, they're so in the weeds that maybe they're not relating to the C-suite as much. Maybe the maths of the world, they don't know how to actually do the work anymore.
Well, so I think the point there is like sometimes, yeah, you do need to like audit what you're doing and say, hey, well, geez, I'm doing a lot of work and a lot of it is good, but I need to actually spend a little more time doing other types of work, like networking and making a case for myself. And I think that's lost. Our in-house Gen Z researcher, you know, you've made it as a show when you have an in-house Gen Z researcher. He was telling us a story of his, a real story, where apparently a competitor of his at the firm he's working at, an underachieving competitor who has really always had, according to him, bad performance reviews. On one company outing with the CEO, it was a golf trip. It was a golf outing.
I can't with
the CEO noticed his swing and remarked, you have a hell of a golf swing. And for weeks and months after that, he'd be noticed in the office as the guy who has hell of a golf swing. And it invariably got picked up by the manager and he found himself getting promoted the very next round.
Jeez.
Hell of a golf swing.
Hell of a swing.
That's what they call FaceTime them. You've got to like walk the halls, get FaceTime with senior leadership. You can't do that as organically if you're working remotely. You've got to do it at a big all hands meeting like Maria.
She got the best of both worlds. She's not going in to do the networking. She's picking the one global remote meeting where everybody's on the call.
Right. And this is why the Oscar motif here and metaphor is great because, you know, in a movie, you get a limited time. And oftentimes, if you've ever worked on a set, I know we have, and we have people who work in the industry, you have a finite amount of time and oftentimes a budget, right? I mean, even with balloon budgets, they're still trying to save money. So you only get several takes or maybe a little bit of lighting. So you have to hit that mark and you have to hit that performance. And Maria clearly does it on a quarterly basis. But here's the thing. We all know those people who always appear to be working like all the time.
And
they're frenetic about
Have you seen the Weekend Update SNL skit where the woman's just throwing papers in the air?
That's it.
They're like, well, what are you doing? She's like, I can't even talk about it. I'm so busy.
And I'll tell you in that regards, the professionals on the Glassdoor community threads really had some very insightful and I think novel ways to appear productive or busy at work. We decided to actually just query GPT and see what it says. And so this is what I think with GPT or Bard said. Here are some ways to appear productive at work. Take notes. Look at screen or board. Doodle. Pretend to move around. Start cleaning. Look messy. Walk briskly with something in your hand.
Yes, the walk briskly with something in your
hand. Nod wisely and say, yes, I see. We should talk about that some more when asked for input. This is the Oracle, by the way, speaking. This is like the old holy Oracle giving us wisdom on how to appear productive work. Walk quickly from your desk to the water cooler or coffee machine and walk back.
This next one's my favorite.
Have a stern expression on your face. And the last one doesn't make any sense. Hold a cell phone under your chin. I'm not sure.
Well, like this?
That's what it is. So in one of the companies I worked with after an acquisition of my first startup, I had a very close colleague, friend of mine. We got along really well. And the way I actually met him was I once saw him in a room he had reserved for himself doodling on a whiteboard. And I was intrigued. I'm like, well, who's this guy, like, you know, innovating some amazing strategy for the company or some product? So I actually approached him once. I'm like, hey, it's pretty cool. Like, what are you working on? What are you doing? And then, you know, after work, we went and met, and he kind of confided. He's like, look, actually, it's just a ruse. I was like, what are you talking about? Like, I reserve the conference room once a week, and I go in there and I just make a big show on the whiteboard and make it a point for people to choose. And I'm like,
Matt, did he divulge that to you?
He like, did, because we became friends. We became
close. Oh, you know, so he kind of leans friends. In. Probably. He's like, hey, yeah. I got to tell you something.
Yeah, yeah. So that was a masterful stroke. And, you know, on that note, I was going to read some of the threads of what some folks had written here. So this one kind of along these lines, essentially no one knew what I did, but my job had a reputation for being important and it was an esoteric function. Most of the job actually entailed being a human link between the business's 1970 technology infrastructure and its 21st century needs. I cut myself out of this equation by bringing 21st century technology into my one-man department, made myself obsolete, and told no one.
This happened at my company where for one of our clients, we're using this technology. It's pretty much obsolete. And when we figured that out, and this person was making a huge amount of money because they had been at the agency like almost since the beginning. We were like, hey. And they were also very, very good at talking and presenting. Right. They understand this thing that none of us understand. So we'll just like let them cook, as the middle schoolers
that
say.
That gets into a whole riff about communication versus informational arbitrage. We'll get into it in a second, but I want to read a few more of these threads.
Please do so the funny. Second one. The second one's hilarious. This is the most instructive thing I've ever read.
You have to look busy. Whenever people are looking, reorganize your desk, grab a piece of paper and walk to the other side of the room as if you have a purpose. As if you have a purpose. Check to make sure you have supplies. Stare at company spreadsheets and ask other people what they're working on. Do what half my coworkers do. Constantly talk about being slammed. Every day of the week, you're slammed. Every single month, you're slammed. You're always slammed. When you have team meetings or activities that include fun, check-in questions, never answer with anything positive. Just, you're always slammed.
So this is what that person that I was talking about, it was just always, they're slammed, they're slammed, they're too slammed. They can't do anything. They can't do anything. Mm. And that's why they need you to give them all the information of all the things you've done so that they can go present it as their own work in meetings.
Yeah, it's
so frustrating.
It's frustrating.
Hey, I just want to interrupt really quick. If you're enjoying this show, please leave us a review and a 5-star rating. Just takes
Aaron. Yeah. That's asking too much. It's just
a couple seconds. Yeah. Just a couple seconds. Literally two. It actually takes less time than me saying this right now.
5-star rating.
5-star rating. And listen, we couldn't do this without your support, sincerely. All right, let's get back to it.
I think a recurring theme here is, even if you find that hack of sorts or like that gap in your company where it just allows you to thrive and do no work, you invariably have to be a pretty good communicator. And that gets at a theme that we've talked about before, this idea of like information arbitrage. So on previous shows, we talked about how engineers, namely technical people, sometimes take advantage of non-technical people because they have information. There's asymmetry of information. They have information, namely technical information that others don't have, and they use it to their advantage. And, you know, I know for a fact in previous development shops that I ran or that I worked for, where, you know, it could be a code commit to fix some bug that literally takes 5 minutes. An engineer can play it off that it took, you know, like I spent 6 hours, the whole day on this thing.
Yeah.
And, you know,
and you only suspect. You can't prove it.
You can't prove it.
So you're like,
yeah. And so on the other side of things, we forget, though, there's also communication arbitrage. Those who are very skilled at communicating, they basically can take advantage of that, in this case, of appropriating credit, I think, in the way that you mentioned, Leah, that your coworker did, and repackaging it and rebundling it in a way which makes it seem that, in fact, they performed a lot of the work, or that they were responsible for the strategy behind a lot of the work, or at the very least, they inspired it, right? That's a very common motif too.
They spearheaded it.
And, you know, I wouldn't doubt it. Even Maria in her own PowerPoint presentation probably had a moment where she get a nod of reference to one or two, but the way she did it ultimately made it seem that she inspired the whole initiative. And I think that's what's so crafty about a lot of these Maria types. And what I found interesting here, actually, the cycle though kind of ebbs and flows. If you look like the history of ventures, particularly digital internet ventures. Originally, if you go back 2 decades, it was like the business MBAs besting the engineers, right? You just had to track the cap tables and equity tables of the startups to see that the MBAs were just like robbing blind the engineers. And then at some point in this whole internet thing, it flipped and the engineers became the CEOs and they bested the MBAs. And then you found an equilibrium. I think eventually as some of the stuff became commoditized, some of the coding became a bit more commoditized, you found a nice balance. And I feel like where corporate America is, it's always lagged the venture space, but you're kind of getting there now, where there's finally a bit of equilibrium between the communicator MBA types and the informational IT technical types. That's probably a good thing, because I think having those opportunities for arbitrage, you're going to have too many Marias or too many engineers of some sort trying to take advantage of it.
Well, and in defense of the communicator MBA types, because in your explanation, I realized that I perhaps am one. It's about putting in the work, though, and being a helpful member of the team. Right. This is where my story came to a head with this person I've been chatting about. She scheduled a meeting with senior leadership. We're talking the global chief creative officer was on this meeting. Okay. She scheduled it with two lines of what the agenda was in the meeting. And I was the account lead on this project. I log on. Turns out she's out that day. She was always going to be out. Apparently she had vacation scheduled. All of the senior leadership was like, Leah, what is this meeting about? What are we doing? And I'm like, I don't know. This was not my meeting. I get berated for wasting everyone's time. I was like, that's it.
Right.
I'm out. I'm going to finish this piece off. And then I cannot work with this person anymore because this is just too much.
Yeah. Right. I think for many professionals, it does reach a point of resignation, but then the frustration kicks in. And I think in this comment, this kind of hits on it. So there's this thing called interpersonal skill. You need to purge your mindset of the meritocratic purity that somehow sneaks in through the education system. And all of our minds have implicit biases that easily take over if we don't consciously look to counter them. These biases form a lot of the traditional wall in the corporate world. This is a very smart dude, commenter here. Recency bias, for example, similarity bias, visibility bias. Getting rewarded in the corporate game is a multi-step process. Generally, you still need to do good work, but you have to equally work to highlight your contributions visibly. And so there's this resignation, I think, with a lot of professionals as they make their way through their careers and that, yeah, like these interpersonal dynamics, social dynamics are really important. There's a lot of biases there. But at some time, it does reach a point of frustration. And this other comment speaks about this. When you're a kid, the tale of the emperor's new clothes, he's naked, but everyone pretends he's wearing the finest garments so they fit, is a funny story. But when you're older, you realize the emperor's new clothes is not a funny story. It's a profound insight into human nature. When I was a kid, I thought working for a corporation, you know, adulting, this was all above the line. It was all legitimate and it was all full of substance. It was all about meritocracy. And, you know, it does kind of kick in this story of the emperor's new clothes where, in fact, he's naked.
Well, and that's when you realize that the person leading your company or your office or whatever it may be, your team, is the emperor and it's all just talk and they're not actually executing. That's, can say from personal experience, kind of a terrifying place to be because you don't know where the company's going.
Right.
And that takes a long time, especially when they're a charismatic leader.
At what point do people realize? Is it when they just stop paying the salaries? Or like?
I mean, when I think the probably the first round of layoffs, people start to question like, wait a minute. You said everything was going great and we were growing. Why are we broke?
Why are we broke? What's going on here?
But what I've noticed is maybe Maria's approach and on the other end of the spectrum, sort of the busybody and like looking busy people, they might work for a bit. You can't sustain that way. Like at some point, there's a point of no return where
they just move on to the next company, Aaron, and play the same game.
I'm That's trying to have problem. A moral of the story and you're
like watch
shattering
them on
that.
LinkedIn and you're like, how are they still doing this?
Yeah, you're right. They just move on to the next and then start the cycle
again. But what's interesting, we are achieving as a society some amount of accountability in different spaces. So what's interesting is there's been a lot of news stories recently in the academic space. If there's anything that's synonymous with legitimate knowledge and empirically driven knowledge, it's academia. And as it turns out, the proliferation of these language models has made it easier to call it plagiarization in research papers. And there are now entire movements. Some of this was actually initiated with the whole kind of Bill Ackman fiasco and his wife and all that stuff. But the bottom line is what it's led to is a lot of researchers with PhDs and thesis papers are now having their papers retrospectively analyzed. Say, how much plagiarization did you do? How much of it is actually novel and your own synthesis and understanding? In a way, it's kind of reassuring. There are some checks and balances that, you know, in this case on academia, and maybe in the future, there'll be checks and balances on the Marias of the world.
I have a story. So I'm working with someone who is relatively critical about my PowerPoint presentations and put together this amazing PowerPoint. Everyone was very impressed.
Right.
And he sent me like, oh, these are PowerPoints that I've worked on in the past that you can use as examples. I'm like, great. So I'm going through them and I'm seeing the same slides from this amazing presentation over and over again, like in all of these PowerPoints. And in one of them, it's dated 2016. And I look on this person's LinkedIn, they didn't work at that company until 2017, 2018. They had picked up this PowerPoint presentation. I sound like Aaron now. They picked up these great slides and were using them over and over again. I'm like looking up. I'm like, what else has he lied about? My colleague was like, you've got to drop it. It doesn't matter. And I'm like, doesn't it? It's all a
lie. It's all a lie. It's frustrating.
Plagiarize this one great deck that's getting him through it all. This is the problem with this show. It reminds me of all of these like angry work stories that I've just buried.
So you're going to love this thread then. This is an analytics consultant on Glassdoor. Wanted to switch into a field, data analytics. I took one class in college years ago. I did one dashboard project at my first job and sold myself as someone who actually knew data analytics. I looked up most common interview questions a day before the interview and milked the hell out of that one dashboard project I did years ago.
Jeez.
And somehow I am 6 months into my role in data now.
That surely that will catch up to this person.
Maybe, but we talked about in the past, this fake it until you make it approach. Then, you know, speak with all the confidence in the world until you actually fill in the gap of knowledge. And, you know, a question, if you're a young professional, what's the right route to follow? The savvy communicator or the heads down executor? I'm sure there were moments where we all did the fake it until you make it. We all took that approach at one point.
Aaron's like, no.
I think you're being sarcastic because I'm up until about 4 years ago, that's all I did for 15 years. My brother was like, I remember your first 5 years working in the real world. And they're like, can you build websites? I would just be like, yes, I can. I called my brother and I would just like freelance out to my brother to like do the websites for the company. However, it reaches to a point where that's not sustainable and you got to pick a lane. I think what shifts though, honestly, is that when you get a little bit more comfortable and you have some level of stability, it makes it a lot easier to go, okay, you know, maybe that's not the right fit for me. I should probably hone on this skill.
I think fake it till you make it in the interview, come in confident. You can do it, especially women, because we tend to underestimate our abilities in interviews. I feel like when you're starting, at least in advertising, entry level, people want you to do the work. They want somebody to come in and check tasks off, be on the ground. And then this is the part that's really difficult. There's definitely a point in your career where you have to make the shift to being more strategic and less tactical.
Right.
And knowing where that point is, I've definitely worked with people who either try to go strategic too soon. And I'm like, you are too junior.
Right.
You've got to do a progress report. It's not the right time for you to be building strategic brand presentations. On the other hand, I've worked with senior people who are too in the weeds worrying about the formatting of the progress reports.
Right.
And I'm like, who cares about the progress report? You're supposed to be forecasting our team's finances for the next
year. That's spot on. You know, so, and it's really vexing as a young professional because there's that baton handoff you got to make to yourself. This is where I really need to stop just doing spreadsheet work. And I now need to, like you said, think more strategically. But that's not going to happen unless you have a manager that encourages that. And there's like disincentives there, right? There are a lot of managers. The last thing they want to do from their vantage point is kind of empower this report to start sharing strategy related ideas, butting into his or her realm. And in many cases, that causes them not to.
Holding people down?
No, not at all. I'm saying this is the nature of in my time in corporate America. Like I've seen that a lot where unfortunately, we've talked about the show before, a lot of managers consider it a zero-sum game where it's like, okay, if I'm managing this report, they're doing the busy work. I'm doing some of the strategic work. Therefore, if I let them in on some of the strategy work, then they're butting in on my territory versus 1+1 actually equals 2 or 3, where it's like, no, I'm going to give them a platform to grow and then I have to grow as well. I mean, you kind of asked the question, at what point should the young professional consider making that transition from executor, spreadsheet doer, whatever you want to call it, to chime in on some of the strategy here?
I think this is why it's key to find someone who can be your mentor, who isn't necessarily your direct supervisor. Mm-hmm. Someone who can say, look, you've got a lot of great ideas. Try doing this project, branching off a little bit to sort of dip your toes in because it's time for you to take more of a strategic role, more of a leadership role. And sometimes that person who tells you that is your direct supervisor. But to your point, Matt, sometimes your direct supervisor doesn't have your best interests at heart.
What I've found is I have floundered in that for a long time. I never really have known how to know when to make that shift. I always have been faking it till I make it and just like learning along the way when I screw up.
I think listeners should know that Aaron runs his own business. So he's...
Well, part of it is the Midwestern self-deprecation, and that's just the entry point. Listen, you know, when I was a kid, really young kid, my grandfather, he was a great communicator and he worked for a gas company. He was the first white collar worker in our family. Everyone else worked at the liquor store and he got this job. And when I was a little kid, he would sit me on the counter and give me his speeches for the quarterly marketing reports that he gave. And he would make me recite them. And he would stop me every few sentences. And he would say, oh, stop there. Change your pacing. And he taught me. And I got to tell you, a skill like that, you can become a Maria. And like you were saying, Matt, the person who's the loudest in the room oftentimes takes the credit and gets all the glory. If you're a young employee, build that skill set up, because when it is time to make that shift, you don't want to be caught not knowing what you're doing in the PowerPoint presentation and putting people to sleep.
Here's where it's confounding for Gen Z, or for, like, let's say the young college graduates coming into the market right now. Last week, we talked about the headline, investment banks limiting their analyst class by 2/3, right? The junior analyst class maybe reduced by 2/3 because of AI's ability to do some of this rote work. And it's going into other spheres as well. I think we've long talked about, like, what's going on, right? It's kind of a knowledge white collar recession. Media is talking about it, but not talking about it, because cry me a river, of course. A lot of these are well-to-do professionals who've been stock options and savings for years, now getting let go, terminated. But I think for the young professional, it's kind of confounding, because on the one hand, they're saying you need to learn these skills. On the other hand, those skills are being made obsolete because of technology. Well, geez, what's my claim to climb the career ladder? I need to then become strategic and become a communicator. And, you know, I'll just say, like, if I were graduating in this market and going to work for a company, I would be very confounded. They used to say, I don't play well in the sandbox. I'm always trying to do more than I should have at my tenure. But, like, you have to do that now, because if you don't, you're obsolete. The job description of your current tenure, you know, running a spreadsheet and doing some analysis is being automated.
So what advice would you give?
I think all the advice we gave just a few minutes ago was very traditionally sound advice. But if we're honest, I don't know if it's sound advice any longer.
Yeah. Okay.
Right? It's a really tricky, fast-changing time, because we're being told now the keys to gaining jobs in the market lay in our ability to communicate and communicate with these oracles, these language models. It's no longer programming and coding. And so it's pretty much going back into the realm of creativity and visualization and communication. And those are all higher level skills that we don't allow juniors to do.
I think it's back to why people value the quote unquote personality hires, because those are the people with the soft skills in a world where theoretically in a couple of years, all of those tactical things that I was talking about, junior advertising agency people doing, could be done by AI.
So wait, are you saying that everything that people gave me a hard time for going to school for theater is actually a good investment now, Matt?
Ironically, this is why life is a warp, right? It's just like bizarro world.
Good news, drama majors.
Look, I was speaking with a friend of mine who's a MIT graduate, brilliant kind of engineer. The point he was making actually was a very astute point, is that a lot of engineers don't know how to use AI, because in order to use AI, you have to treat the AI like a partner you're communicating with back and forth. I don't know if
so
no, hard. I'll be honest. So, like, the most sophisticated uses of Claude or these other models I've had is ones where I don't just lay a long prompt at the beginning. I literally set the scenario. I correct it. I'm like, no, you do this. And it's like a back and forth over the course of an hour. I've had hour and a half long conversations where I'm trying to learn an industry. And that's not naturally the interpersonal skill set of a lot of engineers.
I didn't know that.
And so it's like,
really?
You don't communicate
I guess you're right.
Back and forth, right? And so he was making that point. And that's why there's a gap there that's being filled. And they're going to learn that skill. Just a matter of time.
Aaron, you don't know my famous story about asking an engineer what the progress was on our site, and he walked out and quit.
What?
I don't even know what it was about how I asked. He walked out, he quit. He sent a nasty gram to our client about how unprofessional we were. I swear to you, I just asked him what's going on. Like, what's the deal? And I guess interrupted his flow.
I can sense a tinge of the snark, just a tinge of that snark there.
But we were so desperate because we needed to launch this website that we had to beg, and he owned this piece of it that no one else freaking knew. We had to beg this guy back, him come in to
finish it out.
That's
a whole other episode.
I was very upset about.
It sounds like engineers maybe have a tinge of the Oscar winner sort of diva-ness.
It's not just Maria. No, we love him on the show. Let's be honest. We love it. Look, I think there's a reason why the protagonist or antagonist, depending upon the way you say it, today was Maria.
I mean, really, Maria is doing what she's doing. It sounds like she's only going to get stronger with her skill set. Is that what I'm hearing, Matt?
I think she's in a good spot, but it might be short-lived because anybody who worked in a corporation knows that those same people who she was able to adeptly appropriate credit from may not trust her later on and might not open up and answer her questions or actually they report to her, do as good work. So it may be short-lived in that scenario. But if I were Maria, I think my experience has always been when presenting, give the platform to the report who actually did a lot of the work. I would make it a point not to just mention a name. I'd give them 5-10 minutes to present to the director, to the C-suite. I'd bring them in and I'd get permission, particularly if they're a good oral communicator. It makes even my job easier, if anything. I think that's what the right thing would have been for Maria to do, but she is a bit Machiavellian, I think, in her approach.
And for junior employees, because this kind of touches back to the earlier question of when to make that transition, when your boss says, do you want to present these 5 slides that you created? If you're me, your instinct is to be like, no, I do not want to do that. That sounds terrifying, but you have to force yourself to do it because it's
the right thing to do
for your career. Even if it seems terrifying.
And so when we talk about communication, maybe one of the things that could happen there is the folks could jump off of the Slack thread and someone should come up to her and say, man, you're a great communicator, but honestly,
no.
I'm frustrated that you didn't give me credit here. I know. I'm just saying, I feel like that would be...
Confront them.
I don't even know, confront them.
I think they're thinking, how come her boss, how come the director, how come they don't know? And that's the frustration always with the junior class and middle management level is... If the uppers don't know, then it's malpractice. It's like this company's going down. And there's kind of a truth to that. It is the operator's job to know. And I think that's what they're thinking. They're thinking like, why should we confront? Like the bosses should know.
Soft skills are more important than ever. And I don't know if anyone, Matt, have you been on our iTunes reviews lately? Because one of the iTunes reviews is that Aaron is a standout. Because of his soft skills, and I'm convinced it's from his mom. So if anyone wants to get on our iTunes and say Leia is a standout, I will be forever grateful.
Hey, you made it. Thanks for tuning in to The Lonely Office. If you like what you heard, follow us on all major podcast platforms so you don't miss an episode. And make sure and tap 5 stars and leave a review. I know everyone says it, but it actually helps others like you discover the show. Remember, the topics you hear us talk about on the show are sourced from Glassdoor communities, where professionals are having candid conversations about their careers anonymously with others in their industry. To be part of that conversation, download the Glassdoor app. And when you're in the app, make sure and join the Lonely Office Bowl. That's where we are. When you're there, you can suggest a topic idea or an episode idea, or you can make it more formal and email us at thelonelyoffice@glassdoor.com. We'll catch you next time.